Welcome to Friends of Amandla, The Power Within, a special four-part series that explores the authentic stories and lessons from those closest to me, my personal friends. Over these episodes, we'll dive deep into their journeys, struggles, triumphs, and the wisdom they've gathered along the way. This isn't just about their accomplishments, but about the human experiences that shape us all, the mistakes we learn from, the challenges we overcome, and the incredible power of community. A strong tribe can uplift, inspire, and propel us forward, reminding us that every life holds a lesson. And sometimes, the greatest lessons come from the people we know and trust. Welcome to another episode of Amandla, The Power Within, with myself and Mbeu Nkosi. And the woman I'm introducing you to today is my friend Yolandi Michaels. She is the friend who has a youthful spirit and an old soul, the friend who doesn't mind making the cheese board and cooking up prawn storms on holiday, making sure we are all fed and taken care of. She is my friend who I can grapple about the big questions of life with, who I know I can call to say, do you have capacity for me to vent? And will not only allow me the space to do that, but will ask me the hard questions while still giving me a very soft landing. She's my artist. She loves good music and beautiful things. She's obsessed with early mornings, long walks, a deep heart for family, and a deep heart for anyone that she calls her tribe. And she will dance with me at the drop of a hat or a beat that we both enjoy. She just so happens to be the co-CEO of Living Masks Experiential Agency with her sister Zelia, and I love her. So please meet Yolandi, who's already crying.
I feel like you should have sent me that intro so that I could prepare. Oh my God. I'm like, oh my God, that's so nice.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you sitting here with me, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Do you even remember the first day we met? You know me and my horrible memory. It's shocking. It just feels like you've always been in my life.
Yeah, you and I are the same. We are actually the same people. You're not the friend that I look to remind me about somebody's name. You're useless to me. So I am as useless to you in that regard. I don't know. I also just feel like you've been my sister person in my life for forever.
I know. Yeah. It's so crazy because it's one of those things where, you know, you become friends and you just completely move into each other's lives and you teach each other amazing things and you illuminate for each other so many ways that you can stretch and grow and become a better person. And we've been through it. I mean, like, you know, we've been through many, 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 many things together. And the purpose and, you know, the intention that I have for this series, The Friends of Amandla, is it's so easy for us to sit in these spaces and often have conversations with our friends that could be so illuminating to so many other people, to kind of give somebody a sense of what are the people around me that lift me up. And because I don't like talking about people's accomplishments, it's like the fact that you're the co-CEO of your own agency for me is like bottom of the list of the things that I love about you. You know what I mean? And I think that that's so important to remember about the people around you. And I think especially in our age, 40s, I think probably a lot of people are starting to come to that realization. But it's kind of when I go out, you know, I feel like I'm luckily now at the stage where people's first question isn't, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's really such a nice place to be in, where people don't start with what you do and try and get a sense of who you are first.
And I think that's probably where we align. I think we often speak about how absolutely lucky we are in our friendship circle to have a network of friends. And I say a network because, I mean, there's quite a group of us. And, you know, but we often just talk about how lovely it is that we just get to exist as humans first, you know, in the fullness of the complexity that that is, you know. So yeah, I can't remember when we met. I just know that you are incredibly significant in my life. There are, you know, whilst we boast quite a big group of female friends, we're also aware of where people sit in different places in our lives. And you are somebody I count on one hand, who I know that if I need to, think through something, we always talk about you're a natural psychologist. You know, you're a natural therapist. You can empathize with the feeling, but you can lift out and you can look at it and look at whatever it is that's being presented from an absolutely non-judgmental place and just be like, you do try. Sometimes you're like, damn, Chomi, did you do that? You know, but for the most part, yeah, equally a soft place to land, but incredibly pragmatic and really gives such good guidance. So I'm very lucky.
Thank you, Chomi. We're both lucky. So let's go into the first topic that I feel like for me was a place where you really stretched me. As a human being, and is your story of motherhood, you know, with your two beautiful daughters who are grown now, 18 and 16.
Man.
I mean, grown.
grown.
When I think about your motherhood journey, and obviously I know a lot of the details, part of what stretched me was, and I'd like you to give some color to what was happening in your life when these two beautiful girls came into your life. But the thing that I'd really like you to kind of share is this manifesto of motherhood that you wrote at such a young age that has guided the way that you mothered. It's never something I even considered, but when I heard you talk about it, it really stretched me to thinking about the way that I would like to approach any role in my life, whether that's friendship, whether that's motherhood, or whatever it may be. So can you share a little bit about that?
I always knew that I'd be a mom. Funny enough, I never imagined being a wife, actually. So I actually never had dreams of walking down the aisle. It was never a thing. And I think that probably comes from my mom, because she used to say she got married pretty young and stayed married to my dad until she died. But she used to say, don't get married. Travel, see the world. So I blame her. But I don't know. I felt like I don't believe that motherhood is a purpose for everyone. I'm certainly not the person in the street who asks anyone if they are going to have children, because I really think that it's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone.
It really isn't. But I knew it was for me. And I became a mom, I suppose I want to say pretty young, but actually it wasn't young. If I mean, you became a mom at 21.
Yeah.
I became a mom at 27, with my first child. And by the time I turned 30, I had two babies. And the context of the relationship with the father, he was an incredibly big love in my life. But as much as we work as parents, we never worked in a relationship. And, you know, but when you're together and you're having children and, you know, coming to terms with that is really hard. And on the manifesto, we were in Cape Town on holiday the December before Nortando was born. And I just remember being so sad, you know, because I knew that we weren't going to be together for the long haul. I knew that I would effectively be a single mom. I just knew. I mean, I still went on to have one more child with him, which is just testament to life and the human condition to not let go of what doesn't work until it kicks you in the teeth. But anyway, so on the manifesto, I was, Nortando was born in March. So in December, I was in my, going into my third trimester already. So I was super huge. And I used to live in Cape Town. And one of my rituals was walking up Lion's Head. It used to be my Saturday morning ritual. And I had been back in Joburg for about 8 months, and you know, and so during this holiday, I decided that I'm going to go and walk up the mountain because I needed the peace and the perspective. Trees are very important to me. And so I went and I walked up Lion's Head, heavily pregnant, and I could only make it up a quarter way. And I went up with my notebook that I actually have here. It's so tattered.
It's so tattered for me. No. It does show that it was 18 years ago. It really does.
And I just sat on Lion's Head, overlooking the ocean in my Cape Town that I just love. And I wrote what became a manifesto. I didn't know it at the time. And, you know, in hindsight, I realized what I was doing. And I literally wrote about my life. I wrote about what I wanted my life to look like. I wrote about what I wanted motherhood to look like. So I was in the advertising industry, particularly in the events space, below the line activations. And back then, we didn't work the way that we work now. You know, if I arrived at the office at 8:30 in the morning, people would say, oh, half day, you know. So, you know, the culture was you were in at 6:30. I used to live with a best friend of mine in Cape Town at the time. And there were days where at 11:30 at night, she'd call me and she'd say, if you do not leave that office now, I'm coming to fetch you. And now I'm highly pregnant with my first child, and I'm having a crisis of what does my life look like beyond this, you know? And I have a crisis because I'm in a relationship that I just know is not going to be with me on this journey. Motherhood journey. And what does that look like? What do I want that to look like? And that's how the manifesto came about.
And what are some of the things in that manifesto that have obviously come to bear, that you feel like are really special, things that you wrote down? I mean, like, I've seen how you mother very intentionally and very lovingly, but also with a very keen sense of freedom, right? And we'll talk a little bit about where that comes from, because, you know, I love the story of, you know, how your mom used to come home and go next door to her friend's house on some "I need to breathe" children.
And I'm going next door,
and I don't like you right now, right? But there is such a there's such a beauty in that, in some of the things that you learn about motherhood, even from your own mom, that allows you to give your children freedom, number one. But number two, which I think also comes with the intentionality, is understanding that the societal norms of what motherhood is, like a dying to self completely, rather than a filling up of yourself so that your children can see what it's like to be full of yourself and know that they deserve that in their lives and have a life that's full of friendships, of travel, of going out, of choosing different plans over them if it's required, right? That must have, I wonder how that showed up in your manifesto, if it did.
I like that you use the word intentionality as far as I'm concerned, but I think that that's, to be honest, when I look back reflecting on it, you know, so in hindsight, I realize that the function of having written down how I want my life to look, being absolutely honest with myself about the moment that was presenting itself to me, about writing how I wanted to interact with her father, you know, their father now, that process of doing that inadvertently became the thing that became an intentional tool. That wasn't the intention at the time. I wasn't trying to live intentionally. We had none of this kind of language around manifesting your future and blah, blah. I do feel like some years down the line, when I now was a single mom and I had a moment where I thought, oh, wow, what you wrote down was a self-fulfilling prophecy. you know, because I was still grappling with the desire to be together with the father of my children and realize the family that we had actually created. So the journey of coming to realization was one that took a lot of time, and having to meet with you on this, I then went to dig out this old diary and this tattered book with these three pages that are actually stapled in at the back of the book. And it's dated the 6th of December, 2006. My child was born in 2007. And I outline in that manifesto, I wrote things down like, I approve of my ex's way of parenting, and I approve of his discipline. And I wrote things down like, I never, ever want the relationship that he and I have to stand in the way of the relationship that he and the kids would have. And I wrote down that I would never use finances to be the thing that determined whether he had access to his children or not. I wrote down, I would acknowledge when I'm deeply, deeply hurt. And I don't know where that came from. Or maybe I'm being overly simplistic. I grew up in a home with my parents were married for 46 years before my mom passed. And I grew up in a home where I had no illusions of what it took for my parents to stay together for 46 years. And it
wasn't something you romanticized.
No, not at all.
You took work.
Yeah. And I saw the work that they put in continuously. I mean, I remember my mom and my dad going into a round of therapy in her 60s, you know. And I think often we think, oh my goodness, I don't want to be 60 and needing to go into therapy with my husband. But why not?
Why not?
You know, I always see a therapist as a translator.
That's it.
You know, it's literally somebody who acts as a translator between you and the person that, you know, you're sitting in the room with. So I didn't have delusions of grandeur around a relationship. And so I guess from that perspective, I knew that the one that I was in was not going to work for me. But one of the other things that I also learned from my mom growing up as well was she was raised by a single mom. My grandmother and my grandfather got divorced at a time when people didn't get divorced. And they were very, very politically active. And my grandfather left and went to run the safe house in Zambia. And my grandmother was politically active here in her own right as a single mom raising two daughters. And growing up, my grandmother you know, and I know it now as a mom. My mom would say, never threaten your children that you'd send them to an orphanage. And I think, and I mean, I'm a mom, and there's so many times where you just want to say like the shittiest things to your children. And, you know, our grandparents didn't have the filters, you know. And then the other thing as well is my grandfather, typically what many men is of that, well, of many generations, he left. He set up a whole new family and they had three more daughters and, you know, and they lived an exile life. And my mom and her sister and my grandmother struggled to make ends meet. And when my grandfather came back, when I was about 15, to reconcile, my mom said to him, did you ever think about what we were eating? So one of the things that she taught me a lot. And it was just came out of her lived experience was, if you ever take a man who has children, you will make sure that those children eat the same way that your children eat, you know. So, and it was just her venting about her life. It had nothing to do with me. I don't think that she was intending for me.
Imparting anything, but I feel like that's the thing about knowledge being imparted to you is sometimes it is in somebody's lived experience that they then tell you something that allows you to shift a generation, right? Because of the fact that they're saying to you that in my generation, this is what I experienced. And so that should never be that something that happens. It's not like we're sitting down and I'm telling you. It's just, it's words that you're hearing that start informing the way that you think. And I think in you telling the story, it also gives me a lot of clarity of why you are such a great co-parent. And when I say that, I'm not talking about perfection. I'm talking about an intention to co-parent really well with your children's father and with anybody who's in his life, where any children that he's had after your children are like your children, you know. I know how rare that is. That is really rare and requires a lot of maturity. And I don't necessarily say that to say you always feel mature in the moments of every second of every day, but to kind of say overall there's this guiding thing that I have, that the one thing that will not be affected by the relationship that I have with this man is the children. And I think that that's really such a gift.
Yeah, it was a gift. An absolutely unintentional one, having done the process. And I think there's something magical that happens in the transition process. So in that space where life is in flux, you know, I feel like our creative power is really, really high. And I'm saying this with no formal learning or understanding about how that works, but I'm 46 and I now have the gift of hindsight and of being able to look back on my own life as a reference for, oh, but I got through so much stuff. I can keep going, you know? So when I reflect back, I realize that, yeah, that moment sitting on my mountain, overlooking my ocean and sitting with this book that had become a lifeline, you know, just I had the practice of journaling was something that I did. And
you'll teach me, Claire. I can't journal.
Friend, I have so many, like I have a box of journals.
Journal.
I know.
It's really one of those things that I'm like, I really want to learn how to do that. I really wish I could enjoy it. I've tried it a couple of times. It just doesn't work for me. And I don't like that it doesn't work for me, but it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me.
I mean, I really feel like you then have to have a tool that is your tool, Belle. You know, and I do think that, you know, when I listen to these podcasts that you do, I feel like that a lot of that is, these are your journal entries. So much of it is rooted in questions that you're asking for yourself about yourself. You may approach it in, you know, we are discussing someone else, but this feels to me like a repository for, it's your journaling.
Yeah, well, you guys are my journals. Let me put it that way. You know, I mean, I have so many deep, thoughtful, meaningful, burning question asking conversations with all of you that I think in a lot of ways you guys are my journal. And you often reflect back to me the things that I have said, the things that I've intended to do that maybe I'm not doing, etc., which is the gift of friendship, right? And actually I want to go back to you were talking about how in a time of flux your creative power can be heightened. I actually want to talk about how it feels when it feels like you can't access that creative power. And I remember, you know, during COVID, the business, obviously you're in events, the business was hit hard, and there was 2 years there from a career perspective where you had to kind of dig into the trenches of who you were and allow yourself to rest, rest in the knowing that things are going to be okay. But I want you to talk a little bit about what it feels like when you feel like your creative power isn't accessible, and what it took you to overcome that really tumultuous time in your business after COVID. Well, during COVID, let's call it that.
Yeah, because actually I feel like it lasted for 4-5 years. Mm. It was such a crazy time. If I think about, so you were asking about the practice of journaling, right? For me, was really one of the things that continues to get me through those moments where it feels like the rug has been pulled out from underneath you, mm. and there's just like you're sitting in the shit, like mm. we like to say, mm. you know, and getting through that took a lot of prayer and a lot of weeping on the phone with mm. you, and a lot of just having to accept where I was. Mm. And if I parallel that experience to, you know, being now a mom mm. of 2 children, living back at home with my parents because now we have broken up, mm. and feeling like in this moment of my life, I'm in my rock bottom. Mm. It was everything I said I would never be. Mm. And when COVID mm. happened, I could refer back to another massively huge experience. Mm. And yes, having the babies was my doing, mm-hmm. you know, it was very nice, but
it was nice making them. Yeah. Lifelong decisions, that one.
God damn it. But I felt like to parallel both moments, mm. I had very little control over what was life next. Looked like mm. and what was next. Mm. I could literally only make a decision for the next step, the next moment, mm. you know. And so what that does is that pulls you so deeply into the current moment, mm. into, okay, what am I feeling right now? Open mm. my eyes in the morning and I'm anxious, and I have a house of 2 children and I have a live-in helper. And so during COVID, we brought her 2 children to come and live with us. So we're a house of, you know, 6 women. Mm. And I would wake up with no idea, you know, about what life was going to look like. And I guess we all have that experience to some extent. Mm. And I would go and sit on my patio and, you know, YouTube a yoga video. And I was not a yoga human, but I was just like, Lord, I need to do something. So to parallel that period when my children were born, I moved back home with my parents to help. Mm. And, you know, and that was tough for somebody who's deeply, deeply independent, mm. you know, to a fault. Mm. And I remember that period where we used to call that period in my mom's life, we're mm. Catholic, so mm. we didn't grow up with a Bible in the same way as, you know, Protestant mm. Christians. And my mom was just listening to Jesus TV, man, like, oh. And I would just open my eyes in the morning and then just hear this droning of one preacher after the other. And I just thought, what the heck? Mm. And as life would happen and as God orchestrates it, I went from being irritated to sitting up in my own bed, listening to like what I could hear vaguely come from the TV in mm. her room, to getting up and going to sit in her bed with her watching it on TV, to then having a notebook mm. and then taking notes. Mm. And I was taking notes every day. Mm. And she turned 50 at the time and got a Bible from a cousin of hers, but it was a Joyce Meyer Bible. Mm. And it had basically it for each chapter in the Bible, it told you what was happening in the region, mm-hmm. and it unpacked it, and it had, you know, anecdotal notes throughout about, you know, and tied it into life, mm-hmm. you know. That process of doing that, of writing in my journal, going for walks, all of that stuff I employed when I was this mom living in, you know, my mom's house and trying to figure out how to raise two babies. Mm. And then fast forward to COVID.
Needed to draw on that.
I needed to draw on that.
Was struggling, yeah. right? Because I think that the business is struggling, but the business is only a conduit for what you're able to do with your life.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. the way you pay the bills. It's the way the children go to school. It's the ability to go out for lunch or honor loved ones or do whatever it is that you want. And so I think a lot of people really underestimate how much grief is involved in the valley of when a business is struggling in that valley, how much grief is involved in that, right? When you had your kids, you know, there was a grieving of this relationship that wasn't going to continue with their father. If I think about knowing that you studied drama and art at school and that's what you did at UCT and then, you know, coming out and then here's life and now you run an experiential agency, even though you can be happy with what you're doing, sometimes we grieve the things that maybe we thought were possible at some point. And then, of course, the value with the business and your mom passing away very suddenly in COVID. What I'd love to understand from you is how has all of this kind of, I want to call it loss or change, how has it shaped your understanding of grief, but also how to honor memory? Because already from your journaling, I feel like there is a sense of I can always go back and remember what got me through the last hard time. I think the COVID period for a lot of people is a time that they've, if we had to say like deep collective grief that people can understand, it's not individualistic, that people can understand whether you lost somebody, whether you lost your business, whether you, you know, because all of a sudden you were full-time in the house with your person, you lost your marriage because you actually didn't realize that your marriage was a dump.
Already.
Or whatever. But it was such a huge mirror for us in the world, right?
Mm.
What I want to understand from you, and one of the things that I do find so illuminating about the conversations that we have had is just how it's shaped your understanding of grief. Like, how do you look at grief now, today, having survived all your bad days, as it goes?
So I think the one thing that I want to say before I touch on the grief is, yeah, it always takes longer than you thought it was going to take. Oof. You know,
I can say that again.
And that is hard.
That's,
I mean,
the hard part is the time. You know, people say it's going to get better with time. And you're like, you don't understand, this word time has got 5,000 eyes. It doesn't end, this word time.
It doesn't.
It takes so long.
You know, and I think, and I suppose we probably do this just, it's just the human condition, right? Mm. We need to control our life. And so what we do is we go, okay, I'm giving this 1 year max.
And then I need to be over it.
And then life is like, girl, I see you, but I'm going to raise you 5 years, you know. And I'm like, gosh, what do you mean? So, you know, that's probably been the biggest learning is...
it's going to take as long as it takes.
It's going to take as long as it takes. And that's hard, right? And that's where the grieving comes. And there's the grief around what you just can't control. And there is, there's the grief around, but I thought at this stage my life was going to look like this. And as it's taking time, there's the grief of the whole world seems to be opened and working, and when are you still on the couch? Then there's the hopefulness that comes with, oh, it looks like we have some respite. But then after that is the, oh, no, we were just kidding. You still we're still, it's still that time for you, girl. Mm. Just sit, you know. So having to one, just roll with what life is bringing you very often is incredibly tough.
Mm.
And all those come with a level of grief, you know. And it's just, so I think that I'm incredibly introspective by nature. But honestly, the practices came because it's my natural instinct. Mm. I reflect a lot, you know. And so I think that that helped a lot, because it means that in real time, I am asking myself, what is happening here? Mm. Like,
what am I supposed to be learning right now?
Yeah, what is happening?
What is this about?
Yeah, what am I feeling? Mm. And oh my God, why do I hate it so much? You know, this really sucks, you know. And so being able to just also come to terms with, like, this fucking sucks, you know. And then being able to develop language around why it does.
Mm.
It sucks because this is what I'm feeling, you know. And then to also, because that's also where grace comes from, right? Yeah. So grace comes from, you know, I would have these moments where I'd be like, okay, but the rest of the world is opened up, and when are you not working? And so I'd have the anger moments and then the grief moments around that. But then I'd go, oh, but actually, to be fair, this is what is happening globally.
Mm.
Nobody's trying to spend this kind of money. So nobody wants to gather. First of all, we're all just nervous. Mm. 2 years after COVID, everybody was nervous. Mm. Also, when budgets are in flux, no one's trying to spend on events, you know, they're just not. And, you know, and this is just from the work perspective. Mm. And then as far as the personal stuff around work, as you know, my mom worked with my sister and I in the business, and she ran our back office, and it just was really amazing. Mm. I have an incredible blessing around my ability to work with my family.
Mm.
I don't think many people have that in their lives, and I do. So when we lost my mom during COVID, to COVID, so we'd lost the business, lost my mom. And that was incredibly hard. And one of the things that I had to come to terms with as well, and again, it was just in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know I can say to you comfortably that we weren't just grieving, but that our business was depressed.
100%.
You know, like I'm able to attribute that feeling of depression and experience of depression, not just on us as individuals, but on the our business.
And the reason why that's so important is a lot of people running a family business or being so close to family means that where somebody can do the, okay, let me just go to work.
Mm.
Work was a reminder that Irma wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this intertwined experience, exactly like you're saying. And, you know, now the business is starting to thrive again, etc. And it was because both the business and yourselves had to come to terms with the fact that we're going to have to do this without Irma, you know. And that, for me, I feel like, you know, watching you and being so reflective, which is, I think, what I really want the audience to get out of this, is being a reflective person, being somebody who journals or makes an intention to be aware of what they're feeling and how they're feeling, and trying to find a language to express that, not just to themselves, but to other people, actually allows that passage of time to feel like you can sometimes see it objectively. I think there's often times when we've had a conversation where you can say, I'm feeling anxious about this, but I know why. And so you can almost experience it objectively. And in that objective observation of what you're going through, we've been able to laugh really hard about it. If there's one thing my friends are good at, is we can turn a crisis into a moment of laughter, right?
Because isn't it just ridiculous?
Because it's ridiculous. Life is lifing, and it's funny because, wow, we are the butt of the joke.
Wow, because the Lord is sitting up there with my mom on his right side eating popcorn, laughing with tears.
On some look at you, girl.
Baloney.
Baloney. One of the greatest gifts that you have given me is the ability to have deep conversations with somebody, to really reflect on how I'm feeling, to understand why I feel that way, to be able to apply myself to the stretching of myself, really apply myself to it. So not gloss over it, you know. So it's easy to have friendships. And I think that that's kind of also what I want to get across the audience. It's easy to have friendships where you say everything's always hunky-dory. We're always talking on the surface. We're always laughing. But we never, ever talk deeply, because I feel like it's in the deepness that the laughter even has even better meaning. It feels even better to laugh when we know that we're laughing about something that anybody else listening to what we're laughing about, they'd be like, that's ridiculous. But the processing of the depth of our pain is really important for you to be able to make light of it, right? Because in the same way, there is such an honor in being able to recognize and see pain, because also then what we do, and which we're very good at doing as friends, is that we also then recognize and celebrate triumphs with the same energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, nothing goes unnoticed. Anything that you do that is great, we want to acknowledge you for that. And that's a gift. And if you don't have those kind of friends where you can go deeply into pain, you're not going to be able to go deeply into triumph either.
Enjoy.
It's right. Yeah. It's how you, you know, I often hear, let's say, acquaintances or people that I know who will be like, oh, people don't celebrate. I don't celebrate myself because the people around me also don't celebrate me. And I'm like, well, I feel like a lot of that is a consequence of not being able to hold the polarity of life. Nobody's going to enjoy the high highs with you if they don't know the low lows.
100%.
And I love the fact that, you know, you are absolutely one of my friends who's very deliberate about being there in the low lows, but also very deliberate about being stupidly romantic in the mid highs, even the high highs. You know, you're just a romantic person, and I love that. And I think that that is such a gift. And I really hope that people can be surrounded by romance in their lives the way that I am surrounded in mine.
I love that.
Yeah. So aww. I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions.
Those gave me anxiety.
Why?
I was just like, I mean, honestly, in my bloody introspective way. So I was reading your rapid fire questions, and then I realized, I was like, what is happening? Why am I hot? And then I put them away. And then I thought, okay, like, also they were at the top of your list.
Yeah.
So it was the first thing I read, and I thought, oh Lord, how is this conversation going to go? And then I put it away, and then I looked at it again this morning, and I had the same anxiety. And then I was like, why am I so anxious? And I realized that, like, actually I'm in a transition period right now. So I don't actually have, I don't have the answers for a lot of your rapid fire questions, because I'm actually in a shift. I'm in a shift around being able to dream again. I'm in a shift. I'm in a shift where things that were really important to me. You asked in one of your rapid fire questions about a book that really impacted my life. I'm like, girl, no.
Or a song.
I love music. I dance. I am a music human. My house is full of books that I read. I have drawn a blank on a song and a book. And so I just decided that I'm going to tell you that, wow.
I'm not. So basically, is this you instructing me that we're not doing rapid fire questions for you, even though I send them to you beforehand, which kind of takes out the whole sting of them being rapid fire. So that's my own fault. Screw me.
Screw you, babes. I'm like,
okay,
near fork.
I'll take that. Fine. Yolandi said near fork. Yes, all I can say is thank you.
Aww.
Thank you for coming into the space. Thank you for making time for me today. Thank you for opening up a little sliver of who you are in my life to people who listen to this podcast. The reason why this limited series exists, I think I'd love for people to get to know me a little bit better. And I know that knowing who I am is a function of knowing who my people are and my tribe. And I love you dearly.
I mean, I love you. All I thought about was, like, why? Why does she want to talk to us? But I am such a fan of your podcast.
Thank you.
I have listened to every episode and we discuss it. You know, I'm really proud of it because I'm proud of the journey, because this is very much in your purpose, you know. When I listen to you and to how you are able to approach a conversation and how you listen and how you unpack and how you process, I know that this is the beginning of an incredibly large journey for you in this area. But thanks, Mbeo.
Thank you.
You know, it's just really wonderful to have you as a person in my corner, you know, who there is a question you asked if you know, in that rapid fire about if I could do anything, you know.
You love, no rules, no limits. What would it be?
And, you know, when I couldn't figure out an answer to that, actually, the thing that I imagined was lying in Central Park on a summer's day in July and with really lovely wine, because we're fancy bitches, and, you know, with my girls and talking.
Yeah.
And I realized that that is...
Fills me with so much
fills
joy.
Me so much. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. That's Yolandi Michaels, my chomi.
My chomi.